Okay, so we began last week and we are continuing this week to learn of exactly what Hashem did and what we experienced thousands of years ago vis-a-vis our journey of going from Golos to Geula. Golos has many meanings. Geula has many meanings. The Geula is from the Golos that the person is in. So a person can be in a financial Golos, and in that context, Geula would mean financial freedom. A person can be, as it was for us, like Mamish, enslaved. Literally, Geula would mean to become freed from enslavement. And as we go through history, we all recognize that Golos Geula isn't a one step. Oh, now I'm free. Certainly, one will experience many moments in their lives in which they were freed from a certain constraint, only to recognize that now they have a deeper constraint from which they need to have a new Geula. And that's part of the journey of life. What we have as a gift from Hashem in the Torah is a template through which the better we understand, the more power we have in getting direction to understanding exactly what type of work is needed on my part to get out of the golos that I am currently in. When I speak about my work, actually, a lot of it won't be my ego work. It's going to be me knowing what needs to happen, me becoming worthy. There's always going to be work, but there's certain types of work in which I need to do something. Mitzvahs, halachic mitzvahs are in that world. What? Just tell me what to do. Keep Shabbos, don't eat chametz, doing, not doing. There is where I need to know what I need to do. And then there is deeper, and I want to speak to the deeper, in which actually it goes the other way around, that the moment we think we are the doers, we are shown time and again that we have no power. When we acknowledge how powerless we are, and we do a certain type of work which makes us worthy, then God takes us out of our golos. So I just want to give an example for that, and I do not want to focus on that, but this has to be clarified to understand the area of our conversation. So just as an example, if a person on a behavioral level is doing something detrimental, they're eating too much sugar, there the goal is stop eating sugar. True that we have power to control our behavior, yet we all find ourselves in a place where, oh my God, I made this resolution and I did it until when I didn't. And from there you go to understanding that there are some deeper forces, like if someone finds comfort in sugar, or if someone finds relief from a certain anguish in sugar, then ultimately, for them to be able to kick the habit of eating sugar, they're going to have to figure out a better way how to deal with that anguish. And when you figure that out, then you'll have a lot more power to just exercise your instinct control of just don't eat it. We have a lot of power in behavior, and we have almost no power as an ego power over what we feel. The person has anguish. Okay, so just tell me what to do. That's the problem. The problem is that you cannot do something that will get you out of the anguish. You have to be aware of your anguish, and you have to be worthy for God to take the anguish away from you, which He will at times, and He will not at times. And God's taking away the anguish will be the type of redemption that we will be referring to in this conversation. One of the tools that God used as the primary tool in the journey of going to redemption are miracles. Generally, what happened in Egypt was that Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron, they performed or they channeled God's performing of miracles, where something that naturally should go one way literally changed, sometimes to do its opposite. What's the meaning of a miracle? Why does one need a miracle? And how can we better understand that in our journey towards our goal? On a very external level, it makes a lot of sense. You had this mighty nation. They had all the power, right? Pharaoh, the king, had the power to keep us enslaved, the power to let us go. Why would he let us go? But God made miracles that were, for him, so detrimental. He got hurt so badly and constantly being told that if you let the Jewish people go, the pain will stop. He was basically, externally, he was being tortured. And, you know, if you want to get someone to do something that they don't want to do, so as a very, in the external world, what do? Well, you pressured the person. Sign the document. I don't want to sign it. I don't know. Bend their finger. Or worse, until the pain is so much worse than the signing that they come to the conclusion, might as well sign and get rid of the pain. I mean, that's the way one would read the story on a very, very superficial level. Nothing wrong with that when we're superficial. But if you want to get deeper, and the reason why we learn it every year is not to learn the same thing over and over again, is because we want to understand it deeper. So what's the meaning of a miracle? Why is there a need for a miracle? And what does it mean for me? Before we answer the miracle, I just want to point out something interesting, which is that from the many miracles that Moshe Rabbeinu performed, there were some that we learned about in last week's portion of Shemois, that Moshe Rabbeinu performed to the Yidden. And there are other miracles that Moshe Rabbeinu performed to Pari and to Egypt, which is this week's Parsha and next week's Parsha. What Moshe Rabbeinu performed to the Jewish people last week, first miracle that the Torah speaks about was God telling Moshe, throw the stick on the ground. His stick turned into a nachash. Take the nachash back to you. And it became a stick. After which, there were two other miraculous events. I want to focus on the snake, because the snake miracle is repeated in this week's Parsha, that when Moshe Rabbeinu met Paroi in this week's Parsha, wanting to impress on Paroi that God sent him with a message of letting the Jewish people go to serve God in the desert for 3 days, as a proof that God indeed sent Moshe, or that Moshe and Aaron are coming with a message of God, and not a bunch of Jews are trying to trick Paroi to let us go. Same miracle. Differences, same miracle. Difference is that this was the staff of Moshe. This week's Parsha is the staff of Aaron. In this week's Parsha, the Egyptians copied the trick, and then Aaron's staff ate up their snakes. But the general, there's something in general about throwing a stick, it becoming a snake, and then retrieving the snake and it becoming a stick. So I want to share here recorded an idea that came to me last week that I shared it in Shul. And I want to build on that to come back to the bigger picture of miracles. The snake is not unfamiliar to people who learn the Chumash. The snake is the word. The Nachash is what God uses when he relates to us. The story that happened in the beginning of our creation, when we were in Gan Eden, when we were in a redemptive state. Who got us into trouble? We have to take responsibility. Ultimately, our bad choices. But as a player, as the one who seduced us to making the mistakes that we made, you had the Nachash. So first of all, the Nachash, without doubt, represents the other side. It represents some sort of force that is not aligned with godliness in a revealed way. Of course, everything is part of God, and of course, God is the creator of the snake, and of course, there is a godly purpose. There is a spark of godliness in the snake, but the way we understand the snake, the message of the snake, to me, is basically do the opposite of what God is telling me to do. And what I'm sharing now is the premise of the Tanya. I'm just perhaps using more psychological words. The premise of the Tanya, like today is the 20th day of Tevis in Tavshin Pehei, and we just concluded learning the 13th chapter, where the Alter Rebbe finishes to describe the greatness of the Beinoni, which in brief, we have the power that God gave me, and therefore the responsibility that I have vis-a-vis my behavior, what the Alter Rebbe calls my garments, actions, words, and thoughts. But let's just speak about actions in which I taka have the power. Now, like I mentioned before, if I'm choosing to stay on a diet, if the underlying emotion is not going to be addressed, I probably will fail. But theoretically, I could succeed. Every day, I'm tempted again to do something that I don't want to do. I always theoretically have the power not to do it. Just don't eat it. And I'm using that just as a bad example, but let's make it connected to Yiddishkeit, that I'm a Yid, and I'm lucky, and I have a responsibility with that great fortune of keeping the mitzvahs. Some of it is easy, some of it for me is difficult, and the difficulty is, God says, don't do it, but I want to do it. Like, or God says, do something, and I'm lazy, etc. On that level, I have the power to throw something away. I won't do something that I want to do. I have that power. But let's go deeper. Let's go to the feeling behind the decision. Anything that's beyond action. What the Alter Rebbe calls emotions and the way you think. The inner person. The way I feel. And I'll begin with trust. And this is the way I would like to word it. We all have trust and we all mistrust. We all have compassion and we all have cruelty. We all have generosity and we all have stinginess. And we can go through all of the attributes, all of the, unless a person is a tzaddik, they have both. So let's use anger. What would be the opposite of anger? If anger is fire, then the opposite would be love. In other words, not only am I separating myself from whatever, I'm angry at it. It's like repulsed with anger. That's if what I'm saying is accurate, and it doesn't have to be. Just as an example, so we have anger and we have love. For a person to delude themselves to think, oh, I only have trust. I'm deciding, it's a mitzvah to I trust. At best, what they did was, is that they split off, they're ignoring, they're choosing to become blind to the fact that they also have mistrust. Because it's a mitzvah to have trust. And a person can think that they achieve that lofty place of, I have emuna. When in fact, they have emuna, but they also have the opposite of emuna. They're just not looking at it. They're keeping it out of their sight. By thinking that they are able to get rid of it. I worked on myself. I heard that. I worked on myself and I used to be angry and I don't have anger issues.
Maybe that, they also weren't tested then.
That the premise of that is sheker. I worked on it would mean that in as much as I have the ability not to allow anger to be experienced by me, which is great. So I'm not walking around angry the whole time. I learned how to focus on other parts of my life that actually give me the opposite feeling of anger. But in me, there is that anger. Just because I don't see it, it doesn't mean it's not there. Not only that, if I'll actually convince myself that I don't have it because I got rid of it, it's going to come back at me with a vengeance, sooner or later. The more I want to disown it, the more it will live and thrive within me and wreak havoc on myself and on the people around me. Throwing it away won't help you. The other way around, when you own it, not allow it to manifest, no, but when you know all of yourself, the good and the bad, the holy and the animal, the godly, when you have a better understanding of all of you, then it becomes less destructive. It goes back from being a snake. You take it back, you hold it. And then you'll be worthy for God to take it away from you. So it's the opposite of the way people, it's counterintuitive. Only when a person really sees their own limitation, only when a person really sees their own ugliness and they actually finally see that they cannot get rid of it, I have that in me. Do they get some sort of, first of all, containment over it? They get more ability to contain it, not to get rid of it. And the anguish of seeing the snake in me will ultimately inspire me to turn to God and to ask God, take it away from me because I cannot get rid of it myself. Like people who are in the AA program, only when they acknowledge that they have a problem that they cannot get rid of, will you genuinely turn to God and tell God, this is beyond what I can handle. And it doesn't mean that God is going to remove that problem the way you would like. But minimally, when you disown it, it gets worse, becomes a snake. When you take it back, when you own it, the snake is not that great of a monster as it becomes when you let it grow because you're not looking at it, because you're deluding yourself that you don't have it. In the outer world, it doesn't work any way that I'm speaking. So in the outer world, you have kind people and you have cruel people. And there is, Yiddishkeit begins and ends with our behavior. Make no mistake. Yes, we are here to do kindness. And a person who does kindness, even if they have within them some cruelty, from a perspective of that person, did that person fulfill the divine mission for which they were sent here? Absolutely. And the greatness of the person is that they taka externally overcame their cruelty. They did. And they're behaving with kindness. From that perspective, amazing. And it begins and ends with that. I'm speaking about something deeper that ultimately has to be dealt with. And whenever we speak about the final redemption, we're speaking about our conversation right here. Because the external capacity of redeeming ourselves from our own bad behavior was gifted to us in Matan Torah. Not that we did it and it's done. No, we all know that. But we have freedom by the fact that I have the power to choose what to do. That's a gewaltige freedom. we might not appreciate it because we're not enslaved. But if a person were to be a slave, or today would be a person is in jail, and they tell you when to wake up, and then tell you when to go to sleep, and they tell you what to eat. When, God forbid, if a person goes through that experience, they value the fact that I have the freedom and the power to make choices. Now, does that mean I'll always make the right choice? Not yet. But we have that freedom. That was given to us by Matan Torah. What we are looking for now is the ultimate success in making the right choices. The ultimate success will only come when we learn how to transform the inner darkness into light. The ultimate success. Because if I have within me cruelty, which I'm sure I do, and the people who think they don't have it, they have it much worse because they don't think they have it, so they don't see it, that cruelty will come out. The kindest people perpetrate the greatest acts of cruelty. I'm shocked, people say. Mamish. It works that way. Everything has an opposite side. It's almost scary. It's very humbling. So many people see themselves to be very kind, and they're not wrong. In the external world, they're kind people who are constantly suppressing their opposite of kindness to end up do the right thing. Yasher koyach, that's phenomenal. But let's take it further. Further is that there is within them probably a lot of resentment and a lot of negative feelings, that the more they get in touch with that, not that we have the power to get rid of it, that's not the redemption. The redemption is seeing it better and having the experience that God got rid of it for me. Good? Hold this thought, and let me move on to an idea that the Alter Rebbe gives regarding miracles. Beautiful idea. Beautiful idea. We have within us the godly and the animal, like we just spoke. We have both. The godliness in me does not need a miracle. Remember that. Not only it does not need it, it won't impress it with a miracle. It won't have any effect on my neshama at all. There is a part in me that so already knows and believes and experiences that Hashem is the master of the world. So if the sun goes up from our perspective in the east and goes down in the west, once I know that this is God's hand that's doing it, if the sun were to change directions, if I would meet my neshama, the neshama would not even be impressed. Mamish. Of course. Actually, the reason why miracles happen through tzaddikim is because God does not want to impress us too much, because it's going to take away our freedom of choice. The tzaddik already doesn't have freedom of choice. The tzaddik is so aware that God is here. It won't have a wow effect on a tzaddik. The part in me that's not fully believing, and the lower it gets, the worse it gets. The part in me that denies, and that can say, no, it's just natural. It's just nature. That part needs a miracle to prove it that you're wrong. It has to be proven wrong. Everyone will identify with what I'm saying. That whenever you experience a miracle, whatever that is to you, I'm talking about a miracle, you will be wowed by it, and the wow will last for a very short amount of time. I know people that struggle with whether they believe in God or not. I know people, like we all know people, but people that I interact with that have sometimes open up, and you know, that's some people's challenge. They're in a place of doubt whether God is real or not. Miracle happens to them, and they'll tell me, I know there's God. And then just 2 weeks later, they tell me, no, I can explain this. It could be explained. As in an illness that was horrible, as in the new x-ray, it's not there. Not there. Or MRI. And then a few weeks later, the possibility that the first MRI was a mistake. It wasn't a miracle. Because the part, the animal in us, the non-believer in us, even though we don't identify with it, I identify the whole time with my godly. I'm a believer. But there is a part in me that doesn't believe. The animal soul does not believe. I have an animal soul. Just because in my mind, I always see myself as a believing person. But there is something in me that doesn't believe, which is why there'll be moments in which I tackle won't believe deeply. Like, if I'm a believer, if my car goes out of control, for someone who only has emunah and bitachon, their heart will not even pound. I'm in the hands of God. The deep, almost human, the human reaction, oh my God, I'm in big trouble. And anything can happen. And it's out of control. Many people experience out of control. When I believe nothing is out of control, it's only in God's control. And that's the way we all are. We have in us the part that knows God is in control. We choose to live there. We identify with that. But the other part is also there the whole time. A miracle is a dialogue, is a conversation between God and that part. To convince that part via reality that you are wrong. So just like, again, very externally, if you're debating a non-believer, you're trying to convince them, they're trying to convince you, a miracle is God's debating with the animal. And the greater the miracle, the more the animal is checkmated, you're right. And actually, you have these words on the Chumash, that the purpose of the miracles in general was not to free us from Egypt, was not to free us from Egypt, like all of these Hasidic stories. God could have told Moshe to tell the Yidden, just leave Egypt, and they would have been paralyzed. Just leave. It wasn't about us leaving. Of course, it was also about us leaving. From the perspective of, I don't want to be a slave, I need to leave. It was about the Egyptians who were at that time embodying the ultimate snake. They had it under crowns. The ultimate klipa, the ultimate denial of God. Belief in what you see is what you get. Nature is God. And the greater the person, the more you learn how to manipulate nature for your benefit. Use denial for your economy. And you're God. Because you're manipulating, you're the ultimate mover and shaker. It's the ultimate power that denies God was then embodied in Egypt, and it is embodied mystically in the snake. And if we would be able to convince the snake is wrong, you would not need a miracle. Miracle is based on the premise that I'm saying is that we cannot turn the snake over. Our job is to see that it's there. To know that it's just because I don't see it, there's a snake loose in the house. That's a horrible feeling. That's a horrible feeling. And even if someone were to tell you that you don't have the ability to get rid of it, you know what you would want? You would at least want to know where it is. I want to keep my eyes on it. If I see that it's there, I'll keep away from it. If you don't even know that it's there, that's crazy making. So all of the animal in us, all of the inner denial of God and the cruelty and the jealousy and all of the bad midas that we are told get rid of. We can't get rid of it. It needs to be gotten rid of from us. God does that. God does it. The miracle is not the extraction. The miracle is God showing the animal that you're not the boss. When the animal on its own will finally integrate, there's something greater than me. Now it's worthy for God to come to it and to get rid of it. And ultimately, God doesn't even get rid of it because there is something in it that's so amazing, that's even more amazing than the godly. But it has to be, we're many steps away from there. Because the ultimate transformation is that the same thing, it's like reconfigured. It's reconfigured. We don't know what that looks like. On an external level, keep your anger, direct your anger towards the evil. There is evil in the world, you need anger. Oh, it's anger. I'm speaking very externally. Anger is very dangerous and horrible. But in certain circumstances, it's needed and it's going to do you good. Sometimes you need the anger to ultimately do the ikar, which is doing the right thing. You need anger. It's very dangerous what I'm saying. Or jealousy. You know, the sage just says sometimes jealousy, envy, these are very bad emotions. But if my laziness is as bad as it is, and it is, what I need is the jealousy of that person who, let's say, who's learning so much, for me to use the, not to say, oh, I don't have jealousy. I'm living in my non-jealous part. But tap into your jealous part and use it to motivate yourself. You want what they have? Okay, go get it. Who's stopping you? I don't want what they have. I don't want theirs. I want to have what they have. And everyone has the possibility of going to get it. It's much deeper than that, but it's all based on the premise that I cannot get rid of it. A miracle is God showing that lowly part in me, you're not what you think you are. You're not almighty. You're not self-sufficient. You're not self-sufficient. You're dependent on me, God. It has to say you're right. And that's why you need to have, it's called shock therapy. Shock therapy is if something is so deeply ingrained in a bad way, or if a person broke their bone and it got set in a bad way. You have to break it to reset it. That's what a miracle is. In the process of redemption, I'm saying words that are very difficult to swallow if it's misunderstood, is that miracles don't have to be what we consider amazing good things. Any shock that's coming from God that is humbling my arrogance directly is a miracle, and it's part of the redemption. When it says that in the future, we're going to look back at the suffering of the Golas and we're going to thank God for it. Whenever the Rebbe said that, he would cry. Because it's so beyond. And he would speak about the Holocaust. The Rebbe believes in it, but we cannot yet wrap our minds around, what do you mean thank God for the terrible things that happened? We're not going to thank God for the thing itself yet. I don't see how that's possible. We're going to thank God for the effect that it had on us. That when someone has something overwhelming happening, it makes no difference in what direction. They have to acknowledge that they are so vulnerable and so powerless and so limited. The godly neshama doesn't need to live there. It's already godly. The godly soul doesn't have to be humbled. The animal soul has to be humbled. Must happen that way. Because it doesn't give up. Can't. It can't help itself. It is what it is. You can't make the dog into a cat. You cannot make your animal soul into a malach. It's not. That's called an animal soul for a reason. It's such a good, when you're younger, why call it an animal soul? Call it a human soul. We're trying to sanitize it. You have a human soul. The Alter Rebbe doesn't call it a human soul. He calls it an animal soul. Yeah, because it's like an animal. Animal can't help itself. An animal, I'm the owner of the animal. I can choose to keep the dog out. That I could. But the dog is still the dog. The dog is somewhere. And the more you interact with the dog the right way, the less the dog will bite you. The dog is going to bite you. That's the most you can have. You can see it. You can know it. You can understand it. Don't deny it. You guys have young kids. What happens if you ignore your young kid? They'll make a ruckus. A lot of what children do that we will define as out of control is because they're not getting the attention that they need. You're making believe as if they don't exist, right? And a parent says, I had enough of you. Now it's bedtime. Me time is after 8 p.m. And that's it. And they feel that. And they're going to say, you know what? What you think I disappeared? I will show you exactly when you're about to step out. I'm going to wake up and I'm going to get sick for you not to be able to leave me with a babysitter. I exist. Our behemoth is doing that the whole time. You can't throw it out. You throw it out, it becomes a worse snake. You have to hold it. You have to have it. It's not you, but it's part of you. You're godly, 100%. But we have within us that, and we're that creates so much conflict in our lives, which is why it's so easy. You get rid of anger. School, I remember when I was younger, schoolist, you get rid of anger, you do that schooler to get rid of all of the bad midas. And people talk about delusional. I worked on myself, and just because you never experienced anger consciously, what you think it's not there, it's there on steroids. And what normally happens also is that whatever I don't want to see in me, you know what happens? I see it in everyone else. And I see it in everyone else. I'm not saying that a tzaddik doesn't see my flaws. I'm sure a tzaddik does. But a tzaddik doesn't get triggered by it. It doesn't bother him. But whoever is dealing with a problem that they have, if they don't fully own their behema, they just make believe it's not there, they will see it in other people and be upset at them. That's a scary thought. That means that almost every negative quality that you see in the other in a way that I got you, the Baal Shem Tov says you're looking at yourself. Oh my God. And we see a lot of not good things out there. That means it's all in me. Not seeing it as cool, calm, and collective. Seeing it as it's triggering me. Especially whatever is the worst in me that I will be the last one to admit. So if I am a control freak, but I'm not a control freak. I am, but I'm not. People always say, I am, but not. I'll notice it in all other people. If I have jealousy, but I have jealousy. I'm not tzaddik, but I'm not jealous. I fargin. Anyone around me that's jealous, I'll pick it up on them. Like I'll smell it in them. Aha, there it is. It's almost comical. And now, okay, so you, what are you telling me? You're telling me that I have all of these dark things in me. Now what? Now, after I acknowledge that I cannot get rid of it, a miracle is needed. A miracle is needed means God just won't just take it away. God will bring an event in my life that will directly address that custom made, that it's going to shock it. For it to say, oh my God, I got a problem. At least to see the darkness of the dark. Has to see itself for what it is. And then the process begins. But the beginning of the redemption are miracles. In conclusion, miracles are needed for the animal and not for the godly. If I'm a Jew that needs miracles, I have to know where I'm at. In the Chabad world, unlike all of the other Hasidic groups, the Rebbe's centrality to Hasidim is universal to all Hasidim. Hasidus has a Rebbe. But what's the main function of the Rebbe? In all the Hasidic groups other than in Lubavitch, a big part of a Rebbe is miracles. That's why you'll hear. And to the Rebbe, I had a problem, a miracle happened. Because we need to see a miracle, which is true. Why do I need to see a miracle? Because there is a part in me that's in denial of God. It can be subtle. Even though I think I'm a believer and I'm frum and I'm good and I'm kind, MS, but deep down there is another part in me that is the opposite of all, that needs to see a miracle. You go to a Rebbe. The more advanced you get, the more you are able to stop denying your animal from yourself, which automatically makes it not as dangerous. A staff is not as dangerous as a snake. Snake only becomes when you throw it away. The less and less you need miracles. In the Chabad world, it used to be that the Rebbes did not make miracles, and if they made miracles, no one spoke about it. It was almost a badge of pride that in Lubavitch, we are not Jews because of miracles, which can be a statement of arrogance also, etc. In words, I'm already so great that I have some better dialectic with my animal, that already is containing it. Just by the fact that I know that I have this darkness in me, just that keeps me humble. I don't need to be humbled by God. I'm already humbled. I know how to humble myself the right way. There was a great chassid by the name of Rab Shmuel Gerari. Rab Shmuel Gerari, the Gerari family, wealthy Lubavitch family for generations, they were the main supporters of the Rabbeim. I'm going back two Rebbes ago. The Rebbe Rashab had a chassid called, I think his name is Rab Shmuel Gerari, who was the main supporter of his endeavors. Very, very wealthy Jew who gave a lot of tzedakah. Because of his wealth, he traveled and he interacted with many other people, Goyim and Yidden, and other Hasidic groups also had great wealthy people, exceptional great people. So there was a group of Hasidim, you know, that they would meet each other in places where you needed to qualify to get in there. You needed to do business on that level. And they would gather together to create their own Jewish little bubble. And one of the things they would do is that they would share stories of their Rebbes. And Rav Shmuel Gerari never opened up his mouth, because in Lubavitch it used to be, we don't connect ourselves to a Rebbe because of miracles. Yiddishkeit is not about miracles. And one time they told him, it can't be that your Rebbe did not perform any miracle. Can't be. Epic. They couldn't take his silence. So he said, okay, yeah, but I'll tell you a miracle. Miracle was that he went back a couple of years, that there was a huge investment that he was going to make. And he went to the Rebbe Rashab to get a bracha. We asked the Rebbe for a bracha. And the Rebbe told him, don't invest the money in A, invest it in B. It had to do with buying lumber. They used to buy forests and they would make it into lumber. At that time, it was a big business. And they're asking him, and he says, I did what the Rebbe says. I didn't invest anything in A. I invested in a B. And that entire investment got lost. Like, you know, the worst thing, only God can do it. This happened and that had ruined. And they're waiting for the miracle. Like, oh, and he says, no, that, and that's the end of the story. So where is the miracle? He says, the miracle is that I'm still a chassid. And he wasn't boasting. He was trying to tell them that don't make your Yiddishkeit predicated on miracles when miracles were made for the Egyptians. I'm not saying this in a negative way. The Egyptian in me needs a miracle. The godly in me does not need a miracle. It's like when you have a question, how can God do it? You know who needs the answer? My animal soul. My godly soul doesn't need an answer. It doesn't have an answer. It doesn't need an answer. It doesn't even have a question. Okay, I don't understand. It's not bothered by it. Which is gewaldic. Like pure faith. We have pure faith. And then we have a part of us that is troubled with questions. No one should make believe as if they are only the tzaddik. That's the message of the Maimer. We are both. And there is a responsibility to be more tzaddik-like. Make no mistake. So we should take pride in the fact that we're not allowing all of our bad midos to manifest. So the laziness in me, thank God I'm containing better. The anger, I'm containing better. Or I don't even see it. If I don't even see it, I'm going, you're in trouble. Ask a person, what are the midas that you have to work with? What are the midas that you don't have to work with? The ones that they think they don't have to work with are the ones that they have at the worst. Unless they are a tzaddik. And could be, you never know. We have a couple of tzaddikim amongst us. But generally, the Alter Rebbe is saying it doesn't work that way. Very, very few tzaddikim, very few. It's almost like, why are they here? What's the whole avodah? Is to discover that which is hidden and ultimately to turn to God for help and to be worthy for God at times to free us from it. And part of that process will involve a miracle. So yes, when Mashiach will come, it says that God will perform miracles. God will perform miracles that are even greater than the miracles he performed in Egypt. Externally, amen, gewaldic. Inwardly, what it might mean also is that if one were to really open up their eyes, they will see that every wow factor in my life, good and bad, equal, same thing, is addressing a specific part in me, point helping me see where is it? Where is my issue that I cannot get rid of, but I need to know is? Just looking at it in itself is the beginning of my redemption. So all these people, I think, that tell you they were in a car and the car lost, I'm talking about me, lost control and it didn't hit anything. That means that that person has a part in them, that the animal in them, that doesn't fully see God's control in the world. And by the way, there's always something controlling. If it's not God, it's me. So people that think that they have control over parts of their lives that they don't have control over, you know what the greatest miracle is? They'll lose control over the car. They will see, I don't have control, and I didn't hit anyone. But that was God's doing. God has the control. So understanding the Hashgacha Pratis in a deeper way might be the miracles that God is already performing for us, but we have to open up our eyes and see it. You know, the Rebbe said regarding Mashiach, it's here, open up your eyes, which means some of the redemption is dependent on us looking at everything in a whole different way. Listen, there's so much happening the whole time. We are living only the part upon which we keep our focus. And maybe we're focusing a little bit too little here and too much over there, and everything is exactly the way it should be, and changing our focus is so difficult. But the focus is something over which we have control. We choose what we think about. We choose what we do. So it's like someone is telling you, God says, I gave you everything. You're in a lot of trouble. What you need to get out is here and available. Now go do work. And when you finally make your way out, you'll take credit that you were part of the redemption and not you were a child who's nebuch, helpless, and God needed like a kid to pick up the child and to free him from oppression. That happened in the beginning. Whatever has to happen now, without doubt, has to happen with our partnership. And we don't need to do a repeat of what happened before. The Torah was already given to us. That's why Hasidus speaks so much about the inner world. That's why all of humanity now is shifting into the inner world. Mamish. Humanity without Torah shifting into it with the tremendous disadvantage of them minimizing the importance of the outer world. Like for Avraham Yid, the main thing is what I do. That will never change. But my freedom, my geula won't come from it. My geula vis-a-vis being a slave came from it, and I have to still own it. I'll feel a lot freer when I'm in control of my choices. That freedom we were gifted to, and we always have to work for it, but that's not the final redemption. And the final redemption will dafka not mean getting rid of the animal in me. That's the opposite. It's me seeing it better, me knowing it better, and me allowing God, me understanding what's happening, which is God is interacting with my animal every single day and performing miracles. Many people know that. They don't have these words. That's why many people go around and say, I imam or saw God. They constantly see Hashgacha Pratis and they see miracles, which is what's happening. But just remember that the desire to see Hashgacha Pratis and to see miracles, the desire to see it, the pleasure of seeing it, the warmth of God is holding me, I feel. That's all for my animal. My godly soul already has, it knows, it feels that God is holding it. It feels that it's being seen. It feels that it's being protected. It feels safe. It's amazing. And we have that also. The main events that led to the geula was God's interaction with Paroi. The main events that will lead us to the geula is God's interaction with our animal. Because the godly and the Jew is amazing. After thousands of years of doing mitzvahs, the godly part in the Jew is gewaltig. which is also why there was never a generation that gave as much tzedakah as our generation ever. I can almost say there was never a generation that learned so much tzedakah than our generation. I know that's because of technology also. It was the type of goodness that we have now, unprecedented. The godly is wow. And at the same time, the animal is just as bad in the opposite direction. Now, never as bad. It's crazy. So the process of the geula isn't just about, I'll make another hachlata to do more good. That's amazing. It's about becoming opened to my real limitations, for which I have to own and be humbled that I have no power over it. Versus the other parts of my life that I feel empowered. See, it's your choice. It feels good. Even if I make a mistake, at least it's my choice. Good. What about the parts of you that you have no power over? How humbling is that? And to experience the humiliation. And everyone goes through that in life. Things happen that they become mamish humiliated. In the wrong way, it's the worst thing in the world. In the right way, it's a miracle, a gift that was needed for that person. The price of admission to their final redemption must have been all of the suffering. It must have been that. Collectively, and every person in their life. And it's not just this, it's both. I'm telling you, you can have two people living now in this generation, and same life, and one person will tell you that they are the luckiest person in the world, which is true, and another person that will say that he's like Eve, that God chose me for suffering. It's crazy. And every person, I think, has both. I think every person has miracles that they don't appreciate enough, that they should push a dance, like it doesn't make sense. And every person has suffering that's so crazy that they can only manage because they dissociate, they ignore it, they forget it, and that drives them crazy, which is why everyone is crazy today, because of certain things that are so unfair and so unjust and so horrible. We have both. Bring them both together the right way, that's the way towards the final redemption. And may Hashem grant us miracles, wows, that humble us in the good way. That's something that we can daven for. And it's because when something really amazing, that's a miracle, happens to a person, it tells the animal soul who's the boss. God is the boss. And that was something that Rebbe always was asking for, that we should go through the challenge of wealth, not through poverty. We should have the miracles of amazing things. And whatever happened was there for a reason. And we have to understand it better if it's bothering us. We have to understand it differently. It's not going to go away. And we hope for the best, but we accept completely. And we appreciate that anything that showed me how I'm not in control has the great advantage of talking to the animal and telling the animal, you're not God. You're not God. God is God. And we'll leave it at that.